On the football field, the action happens in the blink of an eye. It's like that off the field too when you've been injured. In a split second, your life is changed. Whether on the field or in the courtroom, when you've been injured, you need the right teammates by your side. You need Chase and Boscolo, a law firm willing to protect and fight for your rights. On the football field or in the courtroom, having the right team determines whether you win or lose. When injuries change your life, call Chase and Boscolo, trial lawyers that care.
Oarsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Oarsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees and car washes? Check. Loaner cars and free Virginia inspections? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Oarsman story.
Oarsman Ford Lincoln. Let's ride together.
Hey guys, what's up? This is Josh Norman.
This is Joe Gibbs.
You listen to Redskins Talk.
What up, everybody? JP Finley, Redskins Talk Podcast. The holidays are over. The Redskins season is over. It's 2019, man, and it is time to recalibrate your brain with that in mind. As always, we're brought to you by the good folks at Oarsman Automotive of Virginia. We ride with them. You should do the same thing. Want to remind everybody, we got a really fun evening planned, January 17th. It's Thursday night. We're going to be at William Jeffries Tavern in Arlington, Columbia Pike. Check them out at williamjeffriestavern.com. We'll get there at 7 o'clock. We'll do a live podcast at 8 o'clock. We'll do a little off-the-record session, maybe 8:30, 8:45. And then what happens after that is up to the skies. We'll
and
see.
All off the record.
Yeah, also off the record. We don't go back on the record after going off the record.
Pete, yes, Mitch and Pete are here. Pete wants him to be very clear when he's on and off the record, evidently.
I'm very ethical.
Yeah, sure.
Something.
All right, I want to talk about, we now have the luxury of the season being over, what, 5 days now?
Yeah, a few days. Did you have a good New Year's?
Yeah, I did. I was thinking we should actually do this at the end.
Okay.
Remember how we used to like raid each other's bye weeks?
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah,
do
yeah.
All that? All right. We'll raid each other's New Year's.
Oh, nice.
All
right.
I think I'm going to lose, and I'm fine with it. But
Mitch wins.
Well, we ended up working the whole, like, I didn't get home and relax till
6 o'clock.
7.
Yeah.
We went out, we had 100, and then B-Mitch bought us drinks, which was nice. And then by the time I got home, my wife made a dank meal. So, I don't know. We'll get to that. I want to start, however, with the season being over and kind of where are we now? I think obviously the season was a disappointment. I think there are people very up in arms that there aren't any major changes, or certainly there haven't been any major changes yet. I would caution that because something hasn't happened yet, that it won't happen. I think you're looking at changes to the coaching staff. I don't think you're looking at changes at head coach. I think there may be some changes to the front office, but I don't think it's going to be the change that there's a trending hashtag for a week now that so many people want.
What's that hashtag?
Fire Bruce Allen. Oh, you can find it at any DMV grocery store.
Yeah.
By
golly, that is a thing.
For me, weirdly, with how many days? What day is it? Wednesday? When did the season end? Sunday.
Yes and yes.
And Monday was locker cleanout.
Yeah.
So it's been 48 hours since we were in Ashburn, probably less. Feels like way, way longer.
It feels like forever ago.
Like just not driving to Ashburn today felt so odd.
Yeah, we should have been hearing from like Josh Johnson breaking down a defense today.
Right about now is when like DeShazer Everett and I would joke around about how close I can stand to his locker.
Yeah.
Like that's,
or what Nikes you're wearing.
Right.
That's like, would be smoking somebody in ping pong.
That's like what I'm wired for. But whatever, off season's here, and we get to sit in my car outside of our studio, because there's new things.
Other things happening.
Yeah, there's other things happening at the studio, so we're sitting in my car. And I think two things. I think the 2018 season, in hindsight, really isn't as bad as a lot of people are making it out to be, I think. You can argue whether or not they were paper tigers at 6-3. And I'd probably argue they were. But regardless, they were 6-3. They were in first place in the NFC East. They were a game and a half up on the competition. They were doing pretty well at one point. Then they completely fell apart. There were a number of bad decisions by players, by coaches, and by the front office. And you can pick any of them. You can pick Ruben Foster. You can pick signing Mark Sanchez, starting Mark Sanchez.
I was gonna say.
Both of those were just incredibly bad moves. Things happened defensively. They wore down. They had bad strategy at times. They couldn't get off the field on third down. Right. Players went after fans. Players went after players. Players went after coaches. They cut DJ Swearinger. Like, all of this chaos. Chaos. And they still were 3 minutes away from going into Week 17 with a possible playoff berth.
That was going to be, you know, now that we're a little removed from the season, and I tell you, it feels way more than 48 hours removed.
Way more.
But we're a little removed from the season, and, like, one, you know, bad Blake Bortles throw from the, or not,
Josh Johnson. Josh,
no.
Blake
for the Titans.
Gabbert.
Blaine Gabbert. Sorry, I got my bad quarterbacks confused.
Yeah, right.
But like one bad Blaine Gabbert throw and the Redskins are playing Week 17 for a chance to go to the playoffs.
If Ha Ha Clinton Dix just catches one of those bad Blaine Gabbert throws.
Right. I mean, it's, you know.
And then how different does Week 17 look at FedEx Field? I think there still would have been a ton of Eagles fans, but there would have been a lot more Redskins fans if that game mattered.
Absolutely.
I don't know. But so my greater point is I think with a little bit of time and taking a step removed, 2018 was obviously disappointing. It's a bad year. Anytime you don't go to the playoffs, it's a bad year. Like, it's not the NBA where everybody goes to the playoffs and you're a complete bum if you don't go. But, like, the Skins did not have a good year by any real interpretation.
Nope.
But the bigger picture that has come to vision for me is 2019 looks real bad.
Yes. Very bleak. And when I said, remember I said a couple days ago it looks very bleak, and JP, you're like, why does it look bleak right now? I'm glad that you're coming to the bleak side.
Oh, jeez. Pete's right.
And I also say,
Pete's right, Mitch.
I'll also
say, of course,
say,
Pete's right. Great shot, Pete.
2018 will not feel as bad eventually, but it does right now because the past 6 weeks was the Ashburn Circus, and that's what's weighing on our minds so heavily right now. And I think they really only had a chance in the playoffs because their start was so strong. It's not like they really earned it. They finished 1-6. So,
but I think a lot of that is because you lost your first two quarterbacks.
Yeah,
of course.
Finishing the year so bad, I have less problems with than what 2019 looks like, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah. There are some stinkers down the stretch, obviously. Giants game sticks out. That Eagles game at the end of the season stuck out. But they battled, man. Like, for the most part, they were battling.
Yeah, and dude, I don't mean this flippant. I don't really care. They're supposed to battle. Like, I think we live in a world where people get far too much credit for what they're supposed to do. Like, they're a football team. They're supposed to battle. So I'm not here handing out Pete Haley participation trophies.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that all things considered, 2018 was pretty good because at one point they were doing pretty well. Then things completely fell apart. After Alex got hurt and then Colt got hurt, they made really bad decisions. But, like, at this point, 2 days into 2019, I think you're looking at a real train wreck.
Why do you think 2019 is looking weaker and bleaker?
Here's all I'll say. I never didn't think that.
Yeah.
But now is the time to focus on it.
Fair.
I think when we were having that conversation with a game to go and, like, the conversation about, like, oh, why would they beat the Jaguars? That is absurd. At that point, they were still in the playoff hunt, not to mention you had a football team. And when football teams go on the field, they play to win. And if you don't, players are going to get hurt. Like, that whole discussion, people are like, why didn't they tank? They were starting their fourth quarterback and their 10th guard. That's basically the equivalent of tanking. What the hell are we talking about?
Surprise, surprise. Don't think 2019 is as bleak as you guys say it is.
How?
There's just so much that is unanswered.
I agree
now.
With that. And my bleak, I am not in the 3-13, 4-12.
Well, yeah, it's going to look different after they have a good draft class where they get an edge rusher and, hey, this third round receiver could really help. And Geis is coming back. So, yes, after they make all these changes and additions, we'll be in a little better spot. But right now, there's just so much to address.
But that's exactly
everywhere.
Why. That's why I think you can't be so down on it. I mean, half of this roster could turn over, you know?
It will, because so many of them shouldn't have really been in the NFL anyway.
Fine. Whatever you want. There's going to be a lot of new faces in Ashburn. You know, there's a lot of cuttable salaries.
What are you trying to say then? Go where you're going here. Because I don't get it, what you're saying.
I'm trying to say that I think there's going to be a pretty major overhaul of the starting players on the Redskins. In terms of
where?
I think
offensively I don't really see it.
Maybe
a new left guard. They should have had a new left guard last year.
New left guard. I think you could have two tight ends, two of the three tight ends could be gone.
Reed could be gone. Burnham
could retire. I think you're going to have a new receiver in there, at least one, maybe two new ones. Trey Quinn's going to be your starting slot. You know, Geis is going to be could be your starting running back. You're going to have a new starting quarterback. Not to mention on the defense, pretty much the entire secondary.
Do you not think it's going to be Colt starting?
It could be, but it could not be.
Yeah.
I mean.
Well, I guess I would turn that, what you're saying, around and say, how do you not see this as bleak?
I'm saying if they were stuck with these contracts and stuck with the roster as it stood, then I agree, it would be pretty bleak.
They kind of are stuck with these contracts, dude. The $20 million to Alex Smith next year is a serious, you're stuck.
Right, but we were talking about it the other day, I have a list here. You have the Norman contract, which I agree, I think he stays in long term. But you have,
I don't know if he stays long term. I think he stays for 2019.
2019.
And they get off at 2020. And I could be wrong on that, but because they need so much on the defensive side of the ball, like, you can cut salaries and try to create salary cap room, but, like, you also need to have people on the field.
Yeah. But you get $5 million from Vernon Davis, $6 million from Jordan Reed, $6 million from Zach Brown, $4.5 million from DJ Swearinger. Then you have, like, Colt, Chris Thompson, Stacey McGree, Reuben Foster. There's another 10, 15, 20 mil here that's available to go get players.
I get that.
And they have so many draft picks. There's so many draft picks. You're going to have a lot of cheap talent coming in, especially once they go through the...
A lot of draft picks are fourth, fifth, sixth rounders. I mean, it's not like they're not the Raiders going into this thing with three first rounders.
But they're going to have four picks. They're going to have six picks in the first four rounds.
Yeah, but take tight end for example.
Backloaded, but sure.
You cut Reed and Davis, yeah, you have that money to spend, but hello, you're also down two tight ends. You have no starting caliber tight ends to work with. You have to go find those guys. It's not like it's just going to automatically turn over and be better.
I might be wrong, but how many teams keep three tight ends usually?
I think plenty, because they're supposed to help you on special teams.
Yeah.
I think the concerns are much graver than the tight end situation.
Certainly.
I think you are going into an offseason with you got to figure out what's happening with Bruce Allen. Is he being reassigned? Are you going to let Schaefer and Kyle Smith get the promotions, or do you really risk? I don't think Eric Schaefer's going anywhere. I think Eric Schaefer has a family here, kid. You know what I mean? He's been here for 15 years. Kyle Smith's a young man that has a very bright NFL future ahead of him. If he feels like there's a ceiling where he can go, he might go explore his options. The three of us are young men, or young-ish men in this car. When we feel boxed in, you want to explore your options. Like, that's what happens in life.
When you're a young man and you get promoted
young to... Young people, not just men, women too.
Yes, but in Kyle, he's a young man who is going to be promoted to a pretty big-time position.
It is going to be?
We believe, could be, is being considered for.
Sure.
Whatever wording you want to use.
Right.
And I would think that would behoove him to stay.
Okay. I love you for being positive. I just don't see what you're being positive about. And I will say this. I don't see this as a... I asked Gruden if this was a rebuild. And he said, no, man. We went 7-9. We stood in against these teams. We were right there. And I agree with that to some extent. But I think going from Alex Smith to... I love Colt McCoy. It's very hard to believe he can go 16 games for you next year. I think he is a capable player, but I don't think he's the injury history is that significant. I think you're talking about maybe a rookie, maybe, or I'll keep saying it because I think it's the only QB that makes sense financially, a guy like RG3, like somebody that's available. Like, because the rest of these guys are going to cost... You have $24 million sunk in quarterback already.
Yeah.
You can't sink another $5 million in there. You can spend $1.5 million, but who are you getting for $1.5 million? Mm-hmm. You desperately need an edge rusher. I think you can almost argue that might be more important than quarterback for 2019. All of that said, though, I still think this is a 6-10, maybe 7-9 again team.
I just think it's way too early to say that.
To say what?
That they're 6-10 or 7-9.
I'm just talking about the talent and how I see, like, what I... Look at the NFC East, dude.
But, so
look
I get
at the
that.
NFC East. When Dwayne Haskins goes to the Giants. I mean, you want to start setting fires off.
How good were the Eagles with Carson Wentz?
They're in the playoffs. They went 10-9-7.
Because Carson Wentz broke his back and Nick Foles came in and carried them there. Nick Foles is a free agent next year.
They don't have the money for Nick Foles.
I'm not saying they do, but who knows how good the Eagles are.
Okay. Big picture, I agree with you. That it's the NFL. We don't know anything about this damn league week to week, let alone year to year.
Right.
But my point, Pete, speak up here.
I think you're both right. It's way too effing early to be worried about what their record is. But if you want to be worried about what their record is, it doesn't look like it's going to be anything special.
My point being, just real quick, you have a bunch of draft picks. There are high-priced positions where you have to spend money to get a player of value, to get a worthwhile player there. And there are players that there are positions that you can pull out of the draft and stick in and play right away. And I think you can go edge rushers are expensive to get on the free market, but you can draft an edge rusher that can play week one. If you have to stick another $5 million into a quarterback for a season or two to bridge to whatever your fourth round rookie is that you take, so be it. But you can plug in a couple. You can find the left guard.
They haven't done it.
Well, they haven't attempted to do it.
Right. And they're bringing everybody back.
You got to believe that at this point they recognize it.
I mean, I think Sean LaValle's going to retire. I mean, his body is so beat up that I don't think they can try one more go-around with Sean LaValle.
I agree.
Dude, you're right. It's too early to address individual concerns. I think
normally a 7-9 team, we were a couple players away. We fix up this one unit. We're there. This team feels like it's a lot further away from that.
I agree with Pete.
Certainly, they have to hit this offseason more than they have in the past.
Yeah. They also have to be more active this offseason than they have in the past.
They've reverted too far in the other direction of the, hey, we're going to spend and send the jet around and get everybody to, all right, we're going to sign Zach Brown like 5 weeks after the market opens. They need to kind of hit that sweet spot.
But let's be clear, that is a Bruce Allen-guided philosophy. That's not an accident, what's been happening.
Right.
So as long as things continue how they are, we should expect that to continue. And that's maybe some of my bigger point, that there is a conversations I've had, many of which have been played on this podcast, are that, hey, we're not that far away. This thing's right there.
Yeah.
And I contend that it's not.
It's certainly not right there, but it's not, to me, it's not, hell who, you're not the Tampa Bay Bucks.
The Cardinals.
It's not beyond.
You're not the Cardinals, for sure.
Fine, the Cardinals.
I'm with you. I think, dude, they're picking 15th this year. If you had to give me a draft pick range where they'll pick in 2019, and if it's 0 to 10, 10 to 20, or 20 to 30,
you're picking
I'm taking
10 to 20.
10 to 20, I guess.
Same.
Right.
Same.
And honestly, if I had to drill down,
13 to 17.
It might be right around where they are again. I don't know, man.
Well, that's the problem. How the hell do they break out of that? Because that's what it's been for 3 or 4 years. And yes, that's an improvement over what it was, but eventually they got to take the next step, or else fans will then just get tired of it.
Well, that's a pretty good segue, Pete, into, well, there's two things. I want to talk about this attendance stuff, because I wrote about it, like the tweets are going around.
Yeah.
I think fans might already be getting tired of it. But I also wanted to say something, and this is not a subtweet at all. Brent from Burgundy Blog is a buddy of mine. We actually texted about this. I think people are making too much about Snyder staying at the stadium late after week 17. That's entirely normal. And he's there. He's got everybody he wants to talk to there. That's normal. Now, you can argue that things should be done differently or whatever. Fine. But what happened? Now, I'm not privy to any of those conversations. Maybe there were bigger topics discussed. I don't know. But that was not a surprise at all to me. Think about this also. I'm going to add this. What time did you get out of FedEx Sunday night? I didn't leave until about 11:30.
Yeah.
And we're not in an owner's box with really good food. And,
right.
And you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
what if he's just a big Titans fan and
right.
Check out that Sunday night game?
I mean, maybe you're just watching the game
right.
And then you're like hanging out, talking to people.
Yeah.
You've got everybody in your organization in one place. I believe Dan was spending his holidays in the Bahamas, so he's going back to the Bahamas, which sounds pretty nice.
It does.
And so maybe you're like, all right, I'm going to knock all this out now. I don't think that should be cause for alarm, because that has happened plenty of times.
That is so entirely normal. The game ends, Dan comes down to the locker room almost every week. He's in the locker room as Jay gives his speech. He goes back upstairs, and he's in the stadium until late.
Right.
I mean, home and road. Like, that's part of his game day norm.
And maybe this was later than normal. I mean, there are I'm allowing for plenty of variables.
Certainly,
here.
Certainly.
I just don't think it should be alarm bells.
Yeah, I agree.
It's a non sequitur.
Pete, usually, do you agree or no?
Yeah.
All right.
I think everybody just is grasping on to any sign of, oh, something big's happening, so you're taking something that happens routinely. And
right, like I said this on Sheehan's pod, I think Joe Gibbs being there was Dan reaching out, hey, I think Dan has a relationship with Gibbs in that when he can use advice or just wants to talk about the organization with somebody, Gibbs is there for that. And I am not reading into that Joe's getting involved in the football operations.
Joe Gibbs 3.0. Yeah.
And that's not to dismiss that Dan leans on him as a resource either. And I would argue that's wise. But
one thing I think, just real quick about Dan, that we should make the point of is that in years past, he's been reactionary and angry and done things in the moment.
And got hammered for it.
And so now he seems to be taking a more measured approach. And there's so much angst amongst the fans that nobody wants to hear any part of it about Dan or Bruce or whatever. But you would hope if you're going to be even remotely optimistic that these guys are learning as they go as well. They're in jobs. They've been there a while, but they're learning. And hopefully they're taking a measured approach as to how they're going to move forward.
Mitch is very measured, Pete. You notice that?
I think they're too measured, though. Time to start listening a little bit.
I think there's a fair argument for that, too. I think, I don't know what the hell is going to happen with this hashtag, because it's just not going away.
Measured Mitch.
Measured Mitch. Positive, fancy course, measured Mitch. All right, Pete, who's our Oarsman Dealer of the Week?
Oarsman of Chantilly. And that's all I got for you.
go buy.
We love them.
And then a Toyota? You got at least another kind of cars or something.
Yeah, Toyota. So, of course, you got your Tundras, your Tacomas, you got your 4Runners, you got your Highlanders.
Go check out Oarsman Chantilly Toyota.
Yo, here's a good Toyota fact. Did you know the Toyota logo has every letter in it that spells out Toyota?
Ah, that's cool. I didn't know that, but now that you say that, I believe you. Yeah.
That's some juice for you.
That, you almost evened out from how bad you did there. I guess I'll keep doing the reads.
Cool.
All right, so go buy a Toyota from Oarsman Chantilly Toyota.
Oarsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Oarsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees and car washes? Check. Loaner cars and free Virginia inspections? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Oarsman story.
Oarsman Chantilly Toyota. Let's ride together.
Oarsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Oarsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees? Check. Loaner cars and free car washes? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Oarsman story.
Oarsman, Kia of Alexandria. Let's ride together.
I have two things here. Diane from Channel 9 was asking on Locker Cleanout Day, asking everybody the high point and the low point of the season. She asked Gruden, she asked Josh Norman, she asked everybody. I thought it'd be kind of fun if we all did that.
That's interesting.
I'll start.
This works well real quick with a gallery I'm about to post on our website that traces the 10 points that tell the story of the 2018 Redskins.
So, there you go.
Did you say 11 points?
It's a 54-man roster.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep it at 10. I like the
as long as you guys are doing the math, we're good.
That is me plugging the My Teams app, because you can get this podcast and Pete's story, all that stuff, on the My Teams app. Although, can you get a gallery on the app?
Yes, it'll be up a little bit later, though, because it'll take a while.
Cool.
So check our website and the app.
So I'm going to start by the low point for everyone in the car, I assume, was the passing of Rich Tandler.
Yes.
And we're going to kind of keep this on the football field, because that was, I don't know, that is
That's a low point of life. It's a lot of things up.
Yeah. So as far as the low point of the season, it's Alex Smith going down.
Alex Smith is hurt. He clutched his right knee as he went down, and he is hurt.
And you can make an argument for Reuben Foster, but the answer is Alex Smith going down. Because that, every player you talk to in the Redskins locker room tells you that's when the season fell apart. And they ain't lying. Because this was just done in without cameras, without microphones. The amount of guys that told me that is just shocking. So that's the low point of the season, unless you guys say different.
It's probably the worst point, but there's plenty of other low points. I think an underrated low point was the blowout loss to the Falcons, because that was when your team was still healthy. That was a chance to really come out against an offense that was moving the ball well.
Big time.
At the time, was still kind of in the mix in the NFC, and you just got shredded at home.
The touchdown, I think it was Ridley scored just before halftime.
Yeah. Calvin Ridley takes it all the way for a Falcons touchdown with 28 seconds to go in the half.
Because the Skins had scored and they had made it like a 10-point game. They were going to get the ball coming out.
Yeah.
And it was like, all right, like, bad first quarter, they're in this thing. And then Ridley scores with like 30 seconds left before halftime. You're like, damn.
You're 5-2, your defense was playing really well, and they just got eviscerated.
I'm going to go the Blaine Gabbert touchdown with whatever it was, 3 minutes left.
Sure, yeah.
Play action.
It's a play action, Gabbert rolling, fires man is open, it's a touchdown. That is Pruitt at the back of the end zone.
With everything that happened, as we said earlier, they're still in the playoff. They're still in the playoff.
Well, then isn't Josh Johnson's pick the bigger one?
Is that bigger? Yeah.
I mean,
you're right. Actually, that's
the touchdown gave them the lead.
Yeah,
but then they're driving back the other way.
It felt, that touchdown felt, I felt the air come out after that touchdown.
Yeah.
And it would have,
I think the air, I think the
air, whatever
the
air
balloon
was left,
popped.
Yes.
At the interception.
Yes.
Do we need to keep going on low points?
No.
I think Reuben Foster, very obviously, was a huge one. Cutting DJ Swearinger, obviously, but like a lot of the back and forth with Swearinger became a low point. A lot of the fan shit between players became a low point.
Yeah, just the
Saints blowout.
That was an early low point.
The Giants,
blowout. Yeah,
woo, that right. covered that.
Now we're good on low points.
All right,
let's get back to positivity here.
That's you, Mitchell. Well, hell, you go first then. High point.
The coolest moment of the season was AP's 90-yard touchdown run against the Eagles.
Through a hole, 15-20, to the 30, AP to the races, to the 50, to the 40, 30, electrified, AP, 90 yards for a touchdown.
You just had Colt go down, Sanchez in at quarterback, and he hands the ball off. The Redskins take the lead, I believe, back with that, with that play. It was vintage AP in a season. To me, that was the singular moment that I take away from the season as the coolest moment.
So for me, AP is the best story of the season, but that was awesome. And the big shot he hit against the Giants too. Yeah.
Through a hole, 40, 45, 50. Up the sideline, 45, 40. To the 30, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown! Adrian Peterson all the way.
Those are both very cool, but I'm going to Cowboys game at home.
Bastard.
When the ball hit the upright.
Hits the upright! No good! Redskins win!
And not to make it Tandler-related, Tandler just, that was the first game without Rich, and, you know, Trent Williams in the locker room afterwards says, man, that was Rich Tandler that blew that ball sideways. That was an unbelievable win and game, I thought. The opener, dude, when they just beat the snot out of the Cardinals.
That was a no-doubter.
At that point, we didn't know how bad the Cardinals were.
Right.
I think the win over the pack. I'm sorry, Pete. Go ahead, dude.
Yeah, jeez. There's not that many high points to go around. I'm going to say the win.
See, that's my bigger point about what we opened with.
Yeah.
There are. Like, the first two months of the season still count.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean?
Through a lot of the early ones. I liked the win in New York because they just sacked Eli Manning
because it was his first road trip.
100 times. They just kept Saquon Barkley quiet. Adrian Peterson had the long 64-yarder. That was the first time we really saw vintage AP rip one, a long one like that. And, yeah, put them to 5-2, which three games over 500 was their peak on the year. And, yes, we also saw Billy Joel, and that was really fun as well.
Most fun moment was probably after the—so the Bucks game, I think, was the last time it was fun on the beat because that was before the Alex injury. That was a good—that weather in Tampa was perfect.
I think literally as when the Bucks game ended, that was the last time it was fun because 5 minutes later, Josh Norman was calling out the fans.
We didn't know that till later. That didn't happen till like, that night.
Okay. The hot tub in Tampa was the last time we were truly happy.
Pete, just shut up and let me finish.
Okay.
After the Tampa game, we had some time to kill, and I was just hanging out by the players' buses. It's perfect weather. It's Southern California weather. That's what Alex Smith said to me as he, like, signed some autographs and walked to the bus, standing there with our buddy Danny, and just, like, the team was fired up. They were 6-3, and I remember I said to Kerrigan as he was walking to the bus, I was like, dude, you ever been 6-3? And he gave me this look like, you're effing crazy. Like, I've never been close to 6-3. And it was this stuff's supposed to be fun. You know what I mean? Like, it's supposed to be fun. And that moment was fun. And then, as well documented, it wasn't fun after that.
I miss the happier days.
Well, imagine if we were playing if you listen to Mitch, they're all coming back, so we're good. But, dude, think about if there was a playoff game right now. Oh. We wouldn't be sitting in my car.
Damn, certainly right. Not.
It'd be interesting. And there was a stretch where we were all confident there was going to be at least a playoff game.
A whole playoff game.
Right. All right, anything to add to the highs and the lows? Did we miss anything? Mitch probably has another high. Pete probably has another low.
I think the Grand Canyon was kind of a high and a low.
Sure. No, how's that a low?
Oh, jeez.
I thought that was awesome. Also, shout out to my boy Jackson, who has compiled all the year-end stats from the predictions we made driving to the Grand Canyon. We're going to do that as a pod sometime. We got to get all the guys that were in the van back together, but that'll be fun.
Let's just put it this way. Michael Phillips will be picking first in the draft next year.
Phillips had a rough go. All right, I want to end talking about the attendance stuff and kind of two-pronged on this. So Sports Business Daily, I believe, Austin Karp sent out a tweet that said, attendance at FedEx dropped nearly 20%, 19%, biggest drop in the NFL. And as a dude who was at every game, my reply to that is, duh. Like, if you were at those games, it was empty in there.
The only thing you figured out is, oh, it's an exact number. It was 19%.
Right.
We knew it was a big drop.
Yes, Mitch?
Part of the reason for that drop.
So, right. There's a bunch of things to address here.
Yeah.
So, I just want to, like, talk about the numbers. When you knew something was wrong this year, the first game of the year, the home opener against the Colts, that place was empty. The announced attendance was 57,000. Last year, the opener, now granted, it was week one, so it's the opener, and it was against the Eagles. So, like, it's an NFC East rival. They had 78,000 announced. That's 20,000 people different. That's very significant numbers. And there are a lot of things going into this. The Skins have been mediocre at best for the last two decades. The fan, at least, people say the fan base has eroded. I don't know about that. I do know that people that want to buy tickets and go to FedEx Field has absolutely eroded. And I have plenty of friends, guys I grew up with, people I grew up with, like my buddy Brian's sister, Megan Callery, is the biggest Redskin fan I'd ever known. And I think she gave up her tickets because it was like, it's just not worth going. And I think that's the biggest battle is that these people are still Skins fans. They just don't want to go to FedEx for an afternoon.
Yeah, and it's half because the on-field product is bad. And another good chunk is because going to that stadium can kind of suck sometimes. With the traffic and it's a long-ass day and you pay a lot of money.
So all of that. And that's been going on for two decades, I say.
Yeah.
There also was, and this is important to point out, that the Skins hired a bunch of new people to to field a ticket renaissance with the fans and to re-engage the fan base and season ticket holders. And all those guys got fired. They got fired last week, 2 weeks ago. But the biggest things they did were get rid of the what we all know was BS season ticket waiting list. And they stopped selling the tickets to brokers. That's what we understand. And I think that is a huge part of these numbers, too.
Right. So we talked about there are 57,000 fans this year that paid basically full price for those tickets. And none of us are business wizards, so take it for what it is. But they had 76,000, you said, last year?
78.
How many of those 78,000 paid between $3 and $10 for those tickets? So you have a situation.
Well, I would argue even more. Once you get them in the door, probably paying for parking and a hot dog, right, and a soda or whatever.
But you had a situation where season ticket holders were getting angry because they have tickets that they're spending $100 on, let's say, and they're looking online and they see them being sold for $5, $10, $15. So they brought, so they created a system where they created maybe a little more loyalty, or they protected the pricing of season ticket holders' tickets, and it was at the cost of losing numbers in the stadium.
Here's my
go ahead. First and last home games are the two different ways. The first home game against the Colts is the La Famina way. Yeah, it might be empty, but it's going to be a lot of Redskins fans, and those tickets are going to be full price.
I don't even know if that was, though,
yeah,
dude.
Okay.
It was, but go ahead.
But then the last home game
point
is, all right, La Famina's gone. The place is as full as we've seen it all year, but holy shit, there's 75% Eagles fans,
right,
and it looks terrible. So you can either have a full stadium and get clowned for all the opposing fans, or have kind of empty stadium get clowned. Either way, you're getting clowned.
And that, to me, is the bigger issue. And it's,
right,
and that's an issue independent. Maybe the way that the guys that got fired were going to build it would have worked long term.
Right.
They obviously didn't get that chance, obviously, right?
Right.
Like, and there are people that are looking at a business ledger saying, hey, short term, this is bad.
Like,
right?
Really bad.
I'm not a math guy.
Worse than the NFL, bad.
But I think the bigger problem is we're all from here, man. Like, we've grown up knowing, even FedEx, when they're good, the place is packed and it's,
yeah,
fun. And I point to RG3's rookie year. That place was electric, dude. Walking around that Vikings game, that Week 17
electrifying
Cowboys game. Like, the place was packed. The whole, like, every person in there is chanting RG3. I mean, they're going nuts. Even the Kirk year, 2015,
yeah,
late in that year. It was full. That Packers playoff game, place was full
was
and
nuts,
ready to rock.
Yeah.
So the long-held theory has been, if they're good, it'll be full, you're fine. This year, week 10,
yeah, the 6-3
you had 6-3 Redskins, 6-3 Texans, two teams in first place. That place should have been full, and there were less than 60,000 people there.
Yeah.
And that, to me, whatever you want to sell it to brokers, you want to keep brokers out, whatever the hell you want to talk about, that's a problem. That to me is a bigger problem than all the rest of it, because that was a situation where the team was,
right,
good.
It was good weather.
Right.
Coming off a big win.
Right.
All the factors were there except the fan turnout.
Now, Mitch will disagree. I think looking at what the season became, you can argue, and I think plenty of fans were skeptical, both because of what they'd seen for a long time and because of the way the team was winning. Like that Tampa win, they gave up 500 yards on,
right,
defensively,
right,
and still won the game. So there is, I get that, but I don't know, man. Outside of RG3, when there was just this wild optimism and that hint of the unknown, none of the rest of this has been that good. Like the Kirk year, anybody think they're going to the Super,
yeah,
Bowl in 2015?
No, but it was an exciting football. It was an exciting brand of football. It was an exciting football for a month. That's fine. But you saw the offense, you saw the touchdowns, you saw the team.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
that was what was different this year. And I think I just, like, the Redskins fired all the business side people, and fans were up in arms about it because, oh my God, nothing's changing. And now we're 2 weeks later or so, and all the statistics are coming out about how down the fan base is and the average attendance and all this. And fans are, you know, like, almost LOL at the Redskins. Look at how much of a mess they are or whatever. Those guys were brought in to help try and fix that problem. And that's, to me, you can't have it both ways.
And last thing on that tweet, didn't it say this was the lowest league-wide attendance since 2011.
Yeah, the whole. I think there's a big problem in sports.
Sports period.
That people are just going to games less.
That's,
yeah,
for another podcast,
right,
at
right,
another
right,
time.
Right. Want to thank the good folks at Orsman Automotive of Virginia. I kind of think we said a lot in this podcast. So if you agree or disagree with us, I don't know. Hit us on Twitter. What's your Twitter, Mitch?
Mitch_Tischler.
And Pete, what's yours?
At P Peter Haley, NBCS.
Really?
My DMs are open.
Really deliberate with the spelling there.
Sometimes my enunciation can get a little weird. So
my
clear.
My Instagram, Twitter, it's all the same. JP Finley, NBCS.
That's good branding.
I want to thank the good folks, Oarsman Automotive of Virginia. We ride with them, so you should too. All right, Mitch, go quick. We're going to rate New Year's Eve. You went to Benihana?
Benihana? Why?
We have a New Year's Eve tradition. We go to Benihana, then we go back to have a little house party. And
whose house did you go to?
Went to my buddy Wes's. We had some...
I like Wes.
Shamborg.
Isn't it Shamborg with a D?
No, these were shotgunning... Like, you could shotgun wine through this device.
Oh, boy.
Things got messy. It was a lot of fun.
All right.
Sounds like a great...
Did you make it to midnight?
Yeah.
All right.
I made it to like 3 a.m.-ish.
Oh,
it was good.
Oh, jeez.
God.
What was your tab at Benihana?
He didn't check.
I actually don't know. I said that to Pete this morning. I don't remember.
All right. Mitch is coming in strong. Pete, mine was... I got home 7. My wife made really good crab cake dinner. I watched Cars 2.
Coleslaw?
With my daughter. No coleslaw. Made a fire, drank some bourbon. The television on New Year's Eve is god-awful.
It's the worst
like there, I feel like there used to be entertaining. The Peach Bowl not being on New Year's Eve bothers me to my core. I want to make that clear to whoever the experts are that moved that.
Yep.
I ended up watching CNN. Those two dudes, Anderson and Andy, were funny. They were like kind of getting wasted.
Good shtick.
That was the best I found because everything else was just so like... rehearsed and processed.
All right.
New York looked miserable, by the way. Lauren and I...
You could not pay me to go to Times Square on New Year's Eve.
I've done it. I did it at like 23. It was awesome, but no thanks.
Did you have to get there like 2 when you were 23?
We were at a bar inside like the perimeter, and we had like wristbands to get in, and then we just walked out at like 11:45, watched the ball drop. I tell you what, I have a tremendous New Year's Eve...
Ooh, off the record?
Off the record story.
Hello. I might ask.
Especially if my buddy Jed.
Jedi.
If Jed will show up at the January 17th, we have a pretty funny story.
Jed is the best. I love Jed.
You think
more
he's
than
so shady, right?
I've now come around on Jed. He's my favorite.
So we went, Lauren and I were like trying to push through, and then at like 11:30, I was like, let's just go to bed. This sucks.
Yeah.
And so we went to bed.
Who gives a crap about the stupid ball drop?
All right, Pete, you're up.
Went to this girl used to work for us. She has a big house, like 10 minutes from me. So I
Ooh.
Went to Michaela is her name.
Oh, what's up, Michaela?
Yeah, she went. Or she
I remember Michaela.
She had a really cool party at her giant,
you don't remember Michaela.
Sick row house. Yeah. Mitch will just be sitting in the office that time and go, "Who's that?" And I'll go, "Mitch, person's worked here for years."
Equation. I mean, we're doing a podcast in my car rather than going to the office.
Why do you think I don't know anybody?
It's just cars are whizzing by us as we're recording.
All right, well, hurry up then, okay. Pete.
So I went to her house, really cool house, played a bunch of Slap Cup, drank champagne at midnight. I ended up spilling a lot of champagne on the ground, and then people started slipping on the spot where I spilled champagne, and I just didn't tell them it was my fault, but it stayed up till like 1:30. It was a good time, and then went home and crashed. It was fun. It was my first ever New Year's Eve on my own. I think it went okay.
On your own? You mean at your own apartment?
Yeah. Oh, and I had my first pregame at my apartment beforehand. Had like 10 people over.
How's that?
It was great. Did a lot of good drinking games. The place held up well. We have a good table for drinking games. We have a good kind of living room. If you don't want to participate, you kind of chill there with a good TV. So that was probably my most encouraging part. It was a good dry run for future pregame.
All right.
That's
glad
impressive.
To hear. Glad to hear
that.
Thank you.
I don't think anybody's New Year's is going to get clowned. I think you guys are... My wife's super pregnant. We're just waiting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, there's nothing we could do. Dude.
Your New Year's Eve was good because you didn't have a baby to deal with.
Yeah.
Like, that is good of a win.
And also, like... Just a three-year-old.
Also, like, a bourbon and a fire is pretty solid.
Yeah. Crab cakes.
I just think... I'm more excited to go out this Friday than I was on New Year's. I'm glad New Year's is over with.
But, Pete, you need to be, like, finding a chick to kiss at midnight.
There was one I probably could have, but then I was looking at her and I was like, I don't really know if I want to kiss you, so I just drank champagne instead.
Let's hope she's not a listener, because you just cost us a listener.
It's okay.
All right, it's time to go. Name. All right, Pete, shut up. Folks,
I should have gone with Mitch.
Thank you for listening. Happy New Year. We'll be back on Friday. I want to do superlatives, so stay tuned.
Oh, that's not...
What Makes You Smile is brought to you by Dominion National. For anyone that needs dental and vision benefits, I have a one-stop shop for you. TeethKeeperSave.com. TeethKeeperSafe.com offers dental and vision benefits for everyone with plans starting under $7 a month. Don't have benefits through your employer? Are you self-employed and need dental and vision benefits? TeethKeeperSafe.com has various plans for individuals to choose from. Visit TeethKeeperSafe.com today and enroll in minutes.
Oarsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Oarsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees and car washes? Check. Loaner cars and free Virginia inspections? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Oarsman story.
Oarsman Fairfax Toyota. Let's ride together.